Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 147, being recorded on the 5th of October, 2016, with special guest, Matthias Carlson. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, our special guest, Matthias, who comes all the way from Sweden, and we're very fortunate to have us. Actually, it's interesting a backstory around how Matthias came to be on our show. He was actually one of our listeners on the Azure Podcast, and he exchanged some messages with us on Twitter regarding his interest in a particular topic in Azure, and we're going to talk about that topic today, which is Kudu, a cool thing that I think everybody should know about, and not many people leverage enough, I think. So it's very nice of him to reach out to us, and he's very passionate about that topic, and we're going to delve into that in just a minute. So we'll give Matthias a chance to introduce himself at that time as well. But for now, let's just get started with all the recent updates. Kale has put a bunch of them and Evan as well has put a bunch of them in the show notes. I guess, Kale, the big one is the price drop, right? I think Matthias and I were just joking about it earlier. I think everybody got like 15 emails on the price drop. So almost everybody knows about them. The odd thing that I found was I logged into my portal account and I didn't see the price drop affect me. Did you check that out, Kale?
I haven't checked it. I got the deluge of emails as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure, like, exactly when that takes effect, so...
It said October 1st. That's okay. What the email said. But as Matthias was pointing out earlier to us before the show started, it may be they haven't propagated that fully. I don't know how that works. But so the odd thing that I noticed is that the price that you get... this price change does impact... The D2V series, okay, they're going to be a 15% lower. But the big change for me is the A1 and A2 basic VMs, right, which I think everybody uses. So it's by far the most popular VMs. They're very cheap to start with. And they say they're going to be dropped by 50%, 50. Okay, that's a huge change because especially for those of us that have a limited budget on Azure, using Azure credit from MSDN subscriptions, for example, that's a big thing because now we can fire up some more VMs, right? Since the price has almost dropped in half. So that's most of my VMs are A1 basic. And I checked and it's still showing me the same price. I don't know when that is going to be impacted. But I think this is some serious cuts that they've announced over here, including the compute optimized instances. The F series was a drop by 11%. And as you mentioned, the new V2 series, so the A series, but the newer version of them, that's coming up in November, and they're going to be 36% lower than the A series. So that's even lower. I mean, I don't know how low they can go, but it sounds like they're really starting to cut down on the cost, which is a good thing for everybody. What else, Kale, you want to talk about in the new?
Yeah, I got a couple things. We put some links out there, but one of the big things for me is DocDB. So there's been some updates to the SDK. Just to hit on a couple of them, the Python SDK now supports version 3. So if you're a Python developer, there's basically two worlds there. There's pre-3 and then there's post-3. So like 2.7. is a common one for the version 2, and then once you get into the 3.3 to 5, it's kind of a big change. So those changes are now reflected in the DocDB SDK. There's been some changes, though, throughout to like .NET and Java and Node, and we'll put the link in the show notes and everything. You should check those out, because just adding I don't know. I call these more like refinements to a lot of them, where it's basically giving support for some of the partitioning of the collections that we do in there, as well as like some of the filtering and sorting and those kind of things. So they're more refinements, but it makes it easier if you're developing on DocDB.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I like the one where it says Azure IoT loves open source. That's a cool one. And what they've done is they've released some open source libraries to allow applications to connect into the Azure IoT Hub, which is a topic that we're going to cover in a few weeks. So our listeners should stay tuned for that. But so in order to connect to IoT Hub and be able to pull out telemetry, things like that, you'd have to use, .NET or a Java SDK that we provide. And now there's this new library, which is an Akka Stream library that's available on GitHub and allows Java and Scala developers to connect into the IoT Hub and pull down telemetry data. So, and that's all completely done in the, open source. So I thought that was a good one. And of course, Microsoft Cloud is coming to France, which is nice. I guess they're expanding their footprint over there, as a lot of it is to deal with the European data sovereignty needs and security and compliance needs in Europe, where the data has to reside in country, and that kind of makes it difficult to have just one data center for the whole continent, for example, or one or two data centers. So this way they're able to offer them specifically to businesses and the government organizations in France as well. So I thought that was another good one. What else do you like in there, Gail?
Yeah, back to the one thing on the IoT thing that you mentioned there. I think it's the cool thing there, and I guess you said we're going to have that in an upcoming show, is we kind of built an architecture. So if you go out and look for like the IoT suite or the IoT hub documentation from Microsoft, we built like kind of a box there, basically, architecture where we have a lot of pieces inside of there that help scale out and build out an IoT suite from device registration the whole way through, scaling and all these different aspects. And obviously we have first party services that do that, but I think this is really big, like, because going forward we're saying we can actually plug those components, swap them out with a partner that's using Java, for instance, in this case. So it gives a lot more flexibility, but you still get all the benefits of having kind of a box there that you can call into. So I think that's huge. The other one that came up, it's on the blog, is about Azure Active Directory. So if there's people, I know a lot of our listeners are building applications that are starting to leverage Azure AD. There's some security stuff you need to take a look at if you're building applications on there, specifically around some of the way we do our global signing keys or our certificates. And if you take a look at that, if you're building applications leveraging Azure AD, in most cases, the automatic rollout or whatever will actually take care of it, so you don't have to make any changes. But it is something you should take a look at, depending on whether you're using some of the more advanced features like B2C and things like that.
Another update is machine learning and RFM. It's something that I was not aware of. I guess, RFM. What is RFM? Recency, frequency, and monitoring. I guess these are ways for segmenting customers, in machine learning models, and that's something that if you want to incorporate that into your machine learning algorithms. They have a way now to hook up machine learning with DocDB, and try to be able to get the most out of this RFM thing that they talk about. So there's the link to that in the show notes, and we'll put it out there. What else, Kale? Anything else you like there?
Yeah, and I think the last one is the OMS Tech Fridays. So I guess the team, there's a lot of news around the operations management suite. And so basically they're doing a series, an overview, some deep dives, and a bunch of Q&As. So you can actually tune into these. They have a schedule out there. And actually they have some of the old ones from past sessions that they did. So good stuff if you're working in the monitoring space there, anything around ASR, backup, op insights, all these things. So take a look. You can join via Skype. So it's open to everybody. We'll put the link out there.
Awesome. All right. So that kind of rounds up all the updates. Let's get started, and let's turn the mic over to our guest, Matthias Carlson. Would you please introduce yourself?
So my name is Matthias Carlson. I'm a partner and senior architect at a company called VCAM. We're a small dev and IT consultancy located on the west coast of Sweden in a city called Gothenburg. We're also a Microsoft Cloud partner. So I'm all about Azure too.
Matthias, and I was, as I mentioned earlier, it was nice of you to reach out to us on our Twitter feed, and it was good. This the very first time we've had one of our listeners on the show, so congratulations to you there on that. And you know, so what, like, okay, so let's just, before we dive into the topic, I know you like talking about Kudu, and we'll get into that in a minute, but give us a feel for, like, you know, how do you see people adopting Azure in your, like, what's the general feel for the way Azure is being adopted, for example, in Sweden? What's the scene over there?
I think it's a lot more positive now, and it's, I had, like, some really good products coming up because of security. So I see, like, in for the first time, like, in, I see big banks say, we only want cloud. So they have turned down the discussion, like, before they were hesitant to go cloud, now they want cloud for security. So that's a big mental shift in management, I think, because the Azure has the ISO standards, they have, like, the security standards, and that's hard for a local player to have.
Right, right. So they actually think they have to have the cloud as opposed to it's nice to have now.
Yeah, so that's, like, before it was, they were hesitant to go cloud, now we're going to, like, this has to be in the cloud. That's a totally new discussion to have, which is nice. Anyway, so that's cool. They're starting to get it.
Yeah. And your firm does a lot of work with banking customers and financial customers?
Well, we have both in retail, e-commerce, and finance. We have variety of customers. But we see on the security side, before they were like, we have to have it on-prem to be secure. Now they're like, we don't want that problem. So it's they're totally like, they get that it's hard to get, like, the certificates for ISO and all those standards, and to get PCI compliant, and to get the, like, enterprise storage. It's complex now with e-commerce sites, and you have the trading sites and things like that. It's good to be someone else's problem.
I agree. Yeah. So tell me. So you know, you were excited about this topic, which is Kudu. How did you come about learning about Kudu? Like, and then, you know, tell me about how you use it, maybe in your day-to-day activities.
Yeah. So I started using Kudu before. Well, when it was Azure websites, before it was Azure web apps, just because it was like the deployment pipeline. So the first time you got in touch with it was when you did continuous deployments. Then I went to Build a couple of years ago, and David Ebo demoed what it really could do, and that it's actually an open source project that you can run also on-prem. And it's like what I've reached out was, what I think is a hidden gem that many don't know about. Many of us do add site and set up the continuous deployment or release management for some part, but Kudu can be a really helpful thing if you learn it.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. So you're saying that you can now. So let's just start with what is Kudu like? How would you best describe it to somebody who asks you what is this thing?
Well, it's the engine that controls the web apps. You have it's the engine that controls the deployments. It also has a set of REST APIs that the portal uses for all kinds of information, for like app settings, deployments, source control information, files, and for the webhooks and web jobs. So it's like the heart of the Azure web app. And each Azure web app has their own Kudu engine, basically. So many don't know that, but each Azure website has at least two web apps. One is the actual app, and one is the Kudu app.
I see. And the two of them are talking to each other internally, yeah, in some way.
Yeah. Basically, Kudu is the supervisor of the regular web app.
Oh, I see. That's good to know. So, and you said now you could, yeah, this is an open source initiative that can be taken,
yeah,
and put
so
on, on-premise
as
well?
It's Project Kudu on GitHub.
Okay.
So it's easy to remember. So yes, Project Kudu in one word. And they have all the... So. Sometimes you can see features there before they are announced, like the Azure functions you can see before build if you follow the commits.
Who's, sorry, go ahead, Go ahead.
Yeah. I just had a couple questions. So, yeah. So Kudu is like this environment basically to help us kind of manage the site, is what you explained there. Can you like maybe talk through like what are you on a day-to-day basis? Like why are you in using Kudu? Is it because a lot of this stuff looks like it's integrated into like, let's say it's a .NET application. We have like features built in Visual Studio to do deployments automatically for us, which arguably is taking advantage of some of these features in Kudu. But when do you find yourself going into Kudu? Like, what are you mainly doing there?
Well, in a way, it's less and less because you see the features in Kudu coming in Portal. So like the Process Explorer was only available in Kudu before, but now it's available also in Portal. But Kudu has some really important things about the runtime. So they have a set of APIs also, but they have like environment information, so you can see what settings are actually running in my app, what connection strings are actually running, what paths, what HTTP headers are sent out, and things like that. So that's hard to see when you publish in Visual Studio because that's just publish. But if you go like an environment tab in Kudu, you can see that. What's the name of the server you're running? Is it 64-bit or not? Because that's on the lowest sites, you only have 32-bit. But sometimes you scale up and people forget to switch that bit in the settings. You can see things like which OS version, you can see the... So that's really good for like a runtime debugging scenario. You also have the debug consoles you can actually use in the browser, like a command line or a PowerShell, so just in browser. So you can go around and see what files actually are on the file system, things which sometimes you think it's more and more you use Kudu when something isn't right, but it's like really good to solve problems sometimes without restarting the site or without republishing things, because then you can solve the real problem.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's where I mainly used it before, was like I would say, okay, we deployed it, and like the website throws a 500 or something, and we say, what happened? I don't know, it's throwing 500s, you know, and then you can pop up and start to see, oh, a binary didn't get deployed or something like that. So, yeah, in my experience, that's what I've used it for. I was curious to see if you were using it. The environment stuff is awesome. I think especially if you're running Node or something like that, seeing how it starts up, like how it bootstraps, and being able to see that in the process tree is kind of cool. I think one other thing we should probably tell our listeners is, how do you find it? Like, we talked about this mysterious thing called Kudu, but how do I get access to it?
Yeah, so if you're in the portal, it's under development tools. They just moved it. So just a couple weeks ago, they changed totally layout of the portal, but now it's under development and advanced tools. But I also added a lot of like features straight on the Azure website overview. So you have like the Process Explorer and things that you have now back on the site. But the big thing in the Process Explorer in Kudu that you don't have, can do memory dumps, which is really helpful because then you don't have to stop the site and still can inspect the heap. So if you have hard problems, then Kudu can often answer that. You also have the opportunity in Kudu to start and stop profiling, and you can do it on sub-processes like web jobs, and if you have a deployment process that takes a long time, then you can do and you get an event tracing log that you can open in the Windows Performance Analyzer. So it's really handy when you have performance issues or some strange thing. I used it today to solve a really hard issue when a flag wasn't set, and then I can watch the heap and see the object that wasn't set, and that was the issue. That can be hard sometimes when you have a whole release management process, you have gone through QA and testing, and to go to the source and see, oh, this is the issue, that's really powerful.
Wait a minute, you said you were able to see the heap, is that what you said?
Yeah. So
how did
basically,
you do that?
So basically, if you load this hard on like on a podcast, but basically in Kudu you have a series of tabs. You have the start page to Kudu, where you have the overview of the REST APIs. You have environment tab where you can see all the app settings, connection strings, environment variables, paths, and things like that. You have the debug console where you can actually start a command PowerShell. And then you have the process explorer. And in the process explorer, you basically get a list of all processes that are running on that virtual machine that is that web app you're running. Like things like Azure Functions, web jobs, deployments, if you use deployments like when you connect to a Bitbucket or a GitHub account, then those deployments are actually executed on CUDA. So because sometimes you can have a deployment issue and can also debug those. But when you see those processes, you can just double click on them and you get up a list with all the environment variables that actually are running on that. You can also do a memory dump. But a real nice feature, if you right click on a line of process, then you can do a full memory dump. And then you get the full heap of your application. And you can
then you pull it down into WinDBG or something.
Well,
like
when you do that, it automatically downloads that, and you can just double click it, and it will up. If you have the enterprise version of Visual Studio, you can basically inspect the heap there, or you can do the WinDBG debugger. Yes.
Ah, that's cool.
And that's like super. It's hard if you don't have a good data model and everything strings, then it's hard. But if you have a good data model with good models and things, then you can actually search for your objects in the heap and find those. So you can, if you use like the WinDB, it was a really great .NET blog. Things that I do that you can actually do link queries against that heap. So we saw on the .NET blog recently, it was, and basically when you do that, you can find, oh, that's Boolean wasn't set, and that's why the web job just exits. I think that's really hard to, why isn't that time job triggering, or, oh, it's actually triggering, but it's running forever, and things like that. And the good thing is that you do it without stopping the application. Because if you have some, this is a payment gateway, or you have something that continuously does logistic exports or things like that, you don't want to stop that site.
Right.
Then you can do, either you can do a full memory dump and then just pauses for a second, and then you can analyze that on your dev machine, or you can deliver it to the developer and he can analyze that heap.
Right. Go ahead.
One other question I had maybe for our listeners is, you talked a lot about you could read a lot of stuff, is what I'm hearing. Can look at the environment variables, we can do a memory dump. That's read-only kind of access. What about write? Can we actually influence it and make changes on the fly?
Well, it depends. Some things you can do, like the issue is that you can't change environment variables, but you can do that through the REST API. So CUDA has a REST API where you can change app settings, you can upload files and list files via REST API. You can do this process of mini dumps via REST API also. You can check how the web jobs are doing, which are running or not, and also the Azure functions. So that you can do, and we actually do that for some sites where our monitoring tools is querying CUDA. Are things running? How much memory usage? And things like that. And we log that over time. So you can see here was a spike on Sunday afternoon. Oh, there was high memory usage. Sometimes you don't want to auto-scale stuff, but you can see, every Saturday is an issue. Then we can do scale up and those when you have data.
Yeah, I was thinking more about the, we used to have a project called Monaco, and now it's kind of built into CUDA where you can, let's say your web config on an application, a web app, you could say, hey, oh crap, I forgot to include this, one of my app settings. And you could redeploy it, no problem, but maybe if you're developing and you say, hey, I just need to see if this works, or I got to test this thing, you could, what I was thinking is we could use that and actually make changes to our config without having to redeploy.
Yeah, you could do that through the debugging console, but the issue would be when you'd redeploy, you would write over those settings. But it's really good in scenarios because the debug console also has a file browser, so then you can click around in the site. And you can, just do PowerShell, so you could edit that file via PowerShell.
Nice.
So that's possible. And a good thing in the Process Explorer, you also have a profiling option, and that gets you an event tracing log, and that's really detailed if you want to know memory usage per web job or things like that. So you can do over time. You can start the profiling and run it for a longer time and stop it and get a good, a standard DAG file, which basically has a zip file with an event trace log in it.
Right. That's what I was going to ask is how do you, I remember I was in there maybe last week and I wanted to see the event log, I couldn't figure out how to do that. Is there an easy way to look at the event log in CUDA?
Well, I haven't tried it. You could probably do the get events, but also to know that it's a very locked down environment in some, you can't do COM components on an Azure web app.
Mm.
And things like that. So some things are locked down. Some things you can do, but probably I can start, but probably you can go back to, through the PowerShell. Get
PowerShell, yes, yeah, that's a good point. I would talk about, of course, when in doubt, use PowerShell. Yeah.
So, which is really powerful. Also, like if you have things like some scenarios, we have deployment scripts, and then you can also debug those through the debug consoler.
Oh, as it's deploying it from your machine, you can...
Yeah, and if they fail, you can rerun, because basically each CUDA has its own Git repository. So what it does when, like, if you change something on GitHub or Bitbucket or Visual Studio, like Team Services, then it basically triggers a webhook to the CUDA and it syncs its local repository with that repository. And okay. So you can see all commits, and you have the Git command line and everything, so you can see things like that which commit ID is the one that's running, and things like that. You can list files. You can also get the IIS log files from there, and you can also see things like deployment logs, and so it's a really good diagnostics tool to do.
I agree. Yeah, it's very, very...
And, cool. Like the Monaco, you can also install as like it's a site extension, so you can use that if you need a real editor.
Right, right. Yeah, that's the way you do the inline source code editing, right?
Yeah.
Do we still have, is that still available? You know, I haven't used that recently. You can still go in and edit the files directly, right? You just click on the file and
yeah.
I think it brings up a little editor and you can just save it right away.
Well, it's like with great power comes great responsibility. So
It's
great for debugging, but don't do that.
yes, especially. I mean, it's good for making one-off changes if you want to try something on a dev server, but I wouldn't recommend it in production, for sure.
Yeah,
making changes like that.
It feel like it can be a last resort if sometimes things act like differently in the wild.
Yeah.
And then it's like a good last resort that we need to really debug this hard issue or something like that. When you have like strange concurrency or asynchronous problems, it's good resort. And also like, a good thing, but could you also have webhooks that you can like ping back to your own Slack or Skype or things like that? So you can configure like post-deployment webhooks and trigger job finish webhooks. So you can, we use it both to communicate to our Slack channels and things like that, and you can also like, if you want to analyze that things, this should have ping back in every hour or things like that. Then you can have external assistance monitoring that without pulling that information. You get that ping to you.
Now, tell me, how do you do this on premises? Like, what's the process there? If you want to, you said you could also use it within the data center itself. Have you tried that?
Yeah, actually, I have one customer that was the first step before they can go to the cloud. So we wanted to have a good deployment story, and basically, you can just clone out the CUDA project on GitHub, and you build it, and it's basically an Azure website that you deploy, and a regular website you deploy to the IIS. And then it can create new sites with that, and it also creates a Git repository for each site you create.
Oh, so it installs itself as a virtual application in IIS on your machine.
Yeah, and then you can use that to create like the rest of the web apps.
And how do you do that? Do you have to write some special CUDA language
It has a small admin UI.
I see.
And like the only thing you don't like, one of the things you don't get versus on Azure, you don't get authentication to CUDA, so you have to like add like regular IIS security or some like reverse proxy, like that runs it or something. But you get the full deployment experience that you can push to the Git repository, and it will run the deployment scripts and things like that. And you can do web deploy, and you can do like connect it to another repository. It's cool.
And nice, yeah. And as you mentioned, it hooks up with Slack or Skype or anything like that.
Yeah.
So you can hook that up on premises as well.
Yeah, but it's like it's a good thing, like to say, you don't RDP into the web server. And the different tools there, but it's good to have like if you know you're going that direction, it's good to start going. Like, it was a really good option then.
That's amazing. I think that's a real find over there, being able to not only use CUDA in the cloud, but also using that same deployment, mentality on premises. It's a good way to get used to the cloud, right? By trying it on premises.
Because for some organizations, you have to take it in steps.
Yeah.
First, you want a build server. You start there, and you don't deploy via RDP, and then it's easy to move to the cloud because then you just push to a different Git repository or connect to different, and then work just like a web app. You don't have everything. That's some pieces are not there, but many pieces are there.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Thank you for that. That was very good. Hey, is there anything else you want to share on CUDA?
Yeah, well, one thing good about CUDA, as standard, it generates deployment scripts for the type of app you're publishing. So, CUDA applies some intelligence to see if this is a Node app or this is a PHP app or like a .NET Core app or like that. And that generates a deployment script. If you have issues, you can actually download that deployment script from the web CUDA portal, which is good, so you can see what's running. Or if you want to do customizations, like if you have a private NuGet feed, that's hard to do in a portal. But you can add that to your deployment script.
Got it.
And that's also a good thing for the debug console. Usually, if you have private NuGet feeds, what are they? Then you can list that through the command debug console.
Now, that command console thing, is that available on the on-premises version as well, or is that an Azure-specific extension?
I think that's available too, yeah.
Okay. That's awesome. That's good to know.
And the Process Explorer and thing, I think things that aren't available online is authentication and web jobs and Azure functions. You can get them through, I think the source is there somewhere, but they aren't enabled by default. And there are some like the SSH things and like regular HTTPS.
Right.
Git deployment works.
Yep. Cool. Great. Thank you for that. Cale, is there anything else you have for Matthias?
No, this was great. Thanks for joining and sharing all this. I'm sure I think this is one of those hidden gems. We said that a lot about things in Azure. Sometimes, we have these really, big picture things out here like DocDB and SQL and all these big services everybody knows. But these are like hidden, little things underneath the covers that are taking care of all the grunt work. And I think it's awesome to people start using these more.
Yeah, it's like some things you only need when you have like a lifeboat. You only need them when you're overboard.
Yep.
So it's good to know they're there.
Yes, it's kind of, I kind of relate it to, in the Windows world, we're used to the sysintons tools, right? That's like our lifeboat, right? If something went wrong, we turn to Process Explorer and things like that. But now you have CUDA.
Yeah, also some things are you can do it with less impact if you have the right tool. We had a deployment that didn't finish on Azure websites. We didn't know why, but it didn't finish. You could resync it or remove or re-add or things like that. But if we just went to CUDA, see, it's running, and we killed it and resynced, and it just worked. And it was small. You didn't have to recreate the website or kill the website, or you just killed that process and re-ran the deployment. And that's much smaller. You don't use a sledgehammer. But many do, they always disconnect the source control or reconnect or things like that. But if you had the right tool, you can do like surgical precision, like a surgeon. You can do with less impact and less, why it's acting up. That's good when you're troubleshooting.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's late over there, and we thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.